G'day, I'm Alex Dickey.
And I'm Peter Rohde, and welcome to Terminally Quantum, recorded at the Quantum Terminal in Sydney, Australia, where we discuss everything quantum.
The Quantum Terminal is a first-of-its-kind co-working quantum hub that supports startups in quantum technology, high-performance computing, artificial intelligence, and adjacent technology companies.
TQT provides the perfect energy, convenience, and community mix to attract new networking partners in the iconic Central Station Sydney Terminal building.
And today we're here with a very special guest, Professor Peter Turner, who is the CEO of the Sydney Quantum Academy. Peter, can you tell us a bit about your background and what the Sydney Quantum Academy is all about?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's exciting to be part of the inaugural Terminally Quantum podcast. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
Yeah, so I'm a quantum information theorist, a physics PhD. Been in the field for more than 15 years, I guess now. Originally from Canada, and have had several positions around the world, came to Australia for the Sydney Quantum Academy gig almost 2 years ago now. So been a strange 2 years, I guess, for everyone. But yeah, it's been great. And I've been visiting Australia for many, many years because of the amazing quantum expertise here that goes back much farther than me. And it is the Sydney Quantum Academy that brought me here. So the SQA is a joint venture between four amazing universities here in Sydney that were all quantum active. They had world-class quantum research groups for many years, Macquarie University, University of New South Wales, University of Sydney, and University of Technology Sydney. So it was recognized that together Sydney represents one of the highest concentrations of quantum technology expertise in the world. Good on the New South Wales government for making that recognition and helping to with the four partner universities found the SQA. So
what makes you think that Sydney is such a desirable location for building a quantum economy compared to other cities in Australia or other places overseas?
I'm not sure. I hear a lot of people say that Australia's quantum tech expertise goes back 20 years and big foundational investments by the ARC in Centers for Excellence. But coming from my background, it goes back much farther than that, and decisions it seems made in fundamental science research in quantum optics, for example, in the 70s and 80s, and people who've spent a long time thinking about what is it that's exactly quantum versus classical, which is a question that the quantum information science has brought front and center, and especially now in the world of applications, it's what is this quantum algorithm or is this sensing protocol? Is it really quantum? Do I really need quantum mechanics to do this?
Some results have been quite controversial on that front, where there's been ambiguity about whether something is really actually quantum or whether it's just another classical result.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's an academic, community that's been asking questions like that. From my experience, the quantum optics community, and Australia's strength, to get around to your question about the strength in Australia and Sydney, like Australia's strength in those areas going back decades. I think is, from my perspective, is part of what's made Australia so strong. And I was, long before the existence of the Sydney Quantum Academy, I was visiting Australia as an academic regularly to collaborate with all the amazing people here. So,
I guess there's quite a number of quantum communities around the world. How do you kind of see Sydney fitting into that global environment? You've got Singapore with a bustling combination of academic and private quantum players. Munich is building the Munich Quantum Valley. How do you see Sydney fit in with that picture?
It's a great question. So we in the SQA, we do a lot of meetings. End of sentence. A lot of engagement. A lot of them are with these other, let's call them, quantum ecosystem builders around the world. And they're popping up. You've mentioned a few, and there's lots and lots of them popping up all over. It's a good question. What can we do together? It's interesting because the quantum tech community is still relatively small, and I think a lot of us know each other, and now you can see a future where they're competing for example, attracting startups or whatnot. Fortunately, I think right now it is still a lot of the conversations are how do we work together? Where is Sydney in that you know, we're right in the middle of it in the sense that, like I say, the quantum pedigree, if you want to call it that, the expertise here is so deep that, you know, it's a first stop or certainly a first thought when it comes to people all over the world when they're, you know, I need good quantum experts, for example. I need some skills. You know, Australia is really, really high on the list and our university partners certainly contributing to that. I think as Kathy Foley, the chief scientist and others, I think, have said, maybe Australia's amazing research record isn't matched to that level with its commercialization record. And I hear a lot of people say that. I think efforts like Tech Central here and the Quantum Terminal where we're sitting, and I think New South Wales government and the Australian government, the federal government, are looking to make a difference there. It's certainly talked about a lot. And I think that's a pretty big opportunity for Sydney and the rest of Australia, especially in the kind of Asia Pacific, area, to become world leading in quantum tech. Certainly what we'd like to see is in entrepreneurship and startups, because it's such a great way to grow the ecosystem.
Do you see a particular time frame for the development of this ecosystem? That is, are there certain goalposts that we're aiming for? Is the goal more to create an economic environment in which things can flourish and just sit back and see what evolves in a free market or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah. Great question. Yeah, so I wouldn't know how to put timelines on it. From our perspective, mostly for myself, but also, you know, in involved in the SQA, being obviously founded by four universities and so close to the amazing academic community here, you know, coming from that, say, academic perspective, grassroots entrepreneurship would be our focus. You know, we really want to help the scientists and the engineers recognize, you know, hey, there's some intellectual property and that you're involved in that is commercializable, and helping them do that. There are some programs in Australia that help do that. I know CSIRO has at least one. But we'd like to see more concentration on quantum-specific entrepreneurship and that kind of thing.
So how do you encourage that?
So we have an explicit way of doing it that we'd like to see. It's not up and running, but entrepreneurial fellowship. So something that the academic community is familiar with, a fellowship scheme, which is basically, you know, salary. But instead of focusing on research milestones, you focus on a business model and a commercialization.
So this is more of a way of cross-pollinating the academic and the private sectors.
Yeah, like I say, I use the word grassroots. I don't know if it's the right one, but you know, TRL0, basically, if you like, if you technology readiness level stuff, you know, really taking the academics. I was involved, I guess I didn't mention before I was here, I was in the UK, University of Bristol, which I think has done an amazing job over the last 10, 15 years in the quantum ecosystem space, and learned a lot there. And so one of the things we learned in the entrepreneurship space is certainly, I mean, this is 5 years ago, so things have changed, it's moving quickly, but when it comes to quantum startups, and I think if you look around, the founders are academics, and the field is too young to kind of drop a business team or something in around an idea and have the academics step away. I think a lot of the good startups that we've seen in the quantum space are led and are founded by academics, and the academics are still strongly involved in the running of those startups. So that's why we would focus on again what I called grassroots, the bringing the academic community in and helping them and supporting them to make a serious career decision, which is massive, right? Like, I'm going to leave academia and focus on a business,
because it's a hard industry to get into, academia, and lots of people would be reluctant to leave it.
Yeah. So I guess as our colleague Simon points out, Simon Devitt, things have changed. So I think it's maybe less hard than it used to be in the quantum space to get academic jobs. And so, you know, maybe these variables will work together to make it more attractive for people to start up. We've certainly seen, I should say, I mean, Australia has quantum startups and Sydney does as well, and they're amazing. You know, they're founded by kind of established academics with long track records and whatnot. It'd be great. You know, what the ecosystem really needs is younger people who are at an earlier career stage deciding, this is worth it for me to make this pivot and eventually that's how, you know, from my perspective, and I think from the SQA perspective, that's the way to grow the ecosystem.
Yeah, you're looking at me because I'm one of the said people who decided industry early on.
Right.
Yeah. I, you know, there's many big players in the global quantum economy that are from Australia. Like the CEO of PsiQuantum is an Australian, same with Xanadu. So obviously back when, you know, they were academics that decided to commercialize their research, they decided they found their countries overseas rather than staying in Australia. So there's been kind of a bit of a brain drain to larger economies around the world. How do we get these people to stay in Australia and stay in Sydney?
Yeah, so exactly that. So I'll keep using this word grassroots. Like, that startup ecosystem, I think if you have the not just the successful smaller startup businesses that are part of the supply chain or whatever, or, you know, adding value to something that people want to do, which would be attractive to for people to come and start or stay and start up here. But as we know, like the majority of these things fail in the sense, you know, quotes unquote fail in the sense that the business no longer exists. But then you have this, you know, imagine an ecosystem where you have people who've made these decisions and you've got a bunch of business aware, you know, quantum ninjas or whatever that can, you know, like a Silicon Valley type of thing where there's other opportunities, people are moving, there's this fluidity. A lot of people have talked about that. Remember, the other good news, right? The Australian federal government has talked about a national strategy. There's been a lot of consultation. Another thing, this word fluidity between academia and industry is being used a lot. So that, you know, that has been identified, and we'll see how the strategy goes. And hopefully it will address that kind of thing, which would help make, coming back to your question, right, make it easier for people to stay here because there'd be more options for them.
Yeah.
So that raises an interesting question. I mean, Australia is only a medium-sized economy. Our economic clout just can't compete with the likes of the United States, Europe, China, countries like that. How does Sydney remain highly internationally competitive in this kind of international marketplace, given that we can't compete for capital the way that the Americans can? We can't compete for human resources the way the Chinese can. And there are lots of barriers to accessing international markets as well. How do we remain ahead of the curve, given that we're just a small or medium-sized economy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And it's, I mean, remember, I'm a physicist, right? So all of this entrepreneurship and business talk is all wild speculation. Yeah, I think it's a, you know, to put a period on it, like that's just a serious question. And other economies, other countries have the same questions. Again, I said I'm originally from Canada, very similar economy and very similar questions being asked. Well, I mean, you certainly don't give up. That's not a good strategy.
Absolutely.
And there's this question about, like, we've used the word kind of specialization in discussions that we've had. You know, do you pick a horse and put all your resources behind it, kind of thing, a certain platform or a certain technology? That doesn't feel like a good strategy just because it's too high risk. You know, it can be hedged. So software, as we know, in the classical information technology is dominated, you know, the value proposition I think now is dominated by software. Businesses, people, regular everyday people, they don't care how their phone works or whatever, right? They just care about what it can do.
Yeah.
So making sure that software and theory, if you like, theory, software, applications, algorithms is a huge, is an equal part to any hardware decisions that research and development decisions that are made, I think is a good idea. And just skills. The bottom line is skills, right? Like you need the people who are going to have the skills to be able to recognize where the opportunities are, and then, you know, presumably it is a market in the end of the day that will make a decision on you know, if there's a specialization or that kind of thing. But you let the experts in the market make those decisions rather than trying to guess them ahead of
time. I guess it also depends then on creating an environment for that market to work. I mean, there are lots of barriers to human resources, for example, to bringing in the best talent from overseas. That would require liberalisation, which isn't something that you can do as the CEO of the SQA. That's something that has to come from higher political levels. Does this involve political lobbying, or how do you go about achieving these things?
Yeah, so... I mean, again, the good news is that there's a consultation that's taking place over the last year and going forward and on a quantum strategy for Australia, and it's open. I mean, you can go onto the DISR's website or the chief scientist's website and read their position paper, and you're invited to respond. So there's a lot of opportunity to feedback those kinds of things, and we are hearing them. So as you said, skills, the ease with which people can come to Australia and work here is being mentioned by everyone, not just academia, by the way, and say students coming or postdocs, but also industry trying to find the skills. Everyone's talking about it, so it is being recognized, and hopefully the government will come to the table with ideas there. But the other thing that is being discussed is things like I've forgotten what the acronym stands for, FIRB, these type of the rules around exports and imports and technologies and dual use and all that kind of stuff, which is has to be handled carefully. But again, there's a lot of people, especially in the startup community, asking the government or reminding the government in this consultation process that they have to have a very carefully balanced policy around the barriers that they put up to importing and exporting technologies and whatnot, because you can stifle this new economy, this new industry before it
gets going.
Yeah,
even barriers to investment and things like that, like getting foreign investment into Australian companies so that they don't have to leave to the US and other larger economies to get, because obviously there's a larger pool of VC investment overseas than there are in Australia. Australian investors are fairly risk averse.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'll say something. Maybe it's not controversial or whatever, but I mean, coming from Canada, very resource based economy, similar conversations, I was going to say that, maybe Australia's goal isn't to be the dominant player on Earth in quantum technology, right? But just don't be a non-player.
Sure.
That's not very ambitious, and I would hope that we're more ambitious than that, of course. But, clearly you don't give up. The research skills and the depth of talent here is world-class, and we've just got to prioritize it going forward and learn lessons going forward on how we can stay punching above our weight.
Do you think any of the alliances that we have, like the recent AUKUS alliance, do they have major implications for Australia's role in this global economy in terms of trade barriers and access to capital and exporting our produce, whatever, software or hardware?
Yeah, so that's a clear mechanism for hopefully lowering barriers, right? It has to be like getting into geopolitical stuff. That us academics would prefer not to, but it's a reality. Certainly things like, we recommended, make visas for students from AUKUS countries, just lower the barriers, right?
Mm.
Some of the lineups for some of these.
That's one of the most common complaints I hear is the difficulty in getting visas.
Yeah. So if you've already got these agreements in place with quotes unquote like-minded countries, then have that play out in things like visas or trade. Presumably that would be part of it, but right now it's early days and a little bit unclear. The other thing worth mentioning, sorry, going back to your earlier question, Peter, around making sure the message gets the government, and I think you used the word lobby. There is now this Australian Quantum Alliance, very, very recently put together by industry here in Australia and a lot of quantum startups. Right now it's sitting under the Tech Council of Australia, I believe, but that's exactly, this is an industry body in quantum, mm-hmm. specifically. So they're brand new. So given a little bit of time, you'd expect them to be playing into this role and sending those messages to government and making, bringing the industry's voice, making sure it was heard.
Hmm. So SQA doesn't normally, I mean, you're involved with the New South Wales government. Do you ever do any interaction with the federal government or?
Yeah, certainly part of the conversations, so the whole community, like I say, being invited to consult on this stuff. Obviously being founded by the universities here in Sydney and very generously supported by New South Wales government, we have a priority there, but we're also playing a role nationally in the sense that we're highly visible, I think it's fair to say. And we're trying to make as many of our programs, for example, undergraduate summer scholarships and things like that. We're trying to figure out ways to make those available to people all over the country, wherever we can. So, a lot at both state and I think federal level, the government's, the word collaboration instead of competition, that phrase is being used a lot. So we're definitely taking that to heart, and we'd very much be happy to play a role in helping unite the quantum community around the country however we can.
We've spoken a little bit about human resources and the fact that, we want to stop brain drain and we want to attract the best people. But looking forward, I can imagine that the future quantum economy is going to be creating a lot of jobs that don't even exist today, job descriptions that simply haven't been written yet. Can you tell us, in your mind, what kind of jobs do you foresee the future quantum economy creating? And if you were to give advice to someone from the younger generation, say someone in high school, considering a career in quantum technology, how should they be positioning themselves? What should they study? What level of education would they need? Because, I mean, at the moment it's dominated by people with PhDs, and that's not always going to be the case in the same way that in the regular software industry, you've got people who do low-level Python scripting all the way up to people who write device drivers or operating systems. Like, there's a huge diversity of things. How do you see this playing out in the quantum era?
Yeah, so I'm as bad or worse as anyone is predicting what quantum tech is going to make possible, including jobs. So we know that, as you were pointing out, in the typical quantum startup, for example, half the staff have PhDs. The other half are, regular, people who make businesses work, right? So and do it very well. So there's all those same needs, right? There's HR and there's product design and there's classical software development and all those other jobs, good jobs that the industry would make possible. There's still going to be a need for, call it PhD or whatever, graduate level or there's research that needs to go on in this field. So, they use words like deep tech, in the startup communities, for example, and I think other things that Australia are amazing at, as I'm learning, biotech and medical devices and that kind of thing with long investment horizons. But one of the things we've been pointing out, and actually the science industry minister was saying this as well at a event very recently, the market. I mean, I would use the words, the market's still a research question for quantum tech, right? A lot of the time, if you're in a 10 or 15 year time horizon for some amazing medical device, at least the market's clear at the end of that.
Well, to quote Donald Rumsfeld, there are lots of unknown unknowns.
Yeah. A lot of quantum tech is research going on right now to see if there is a market, for these devices and whatnot. So it's deeper than deep tech in that sense. So just hammering home your point about how hard it is to make it out. So you asked about advice. So, there's something for everyone. Like I say, that this industry, remember, quantum tech is a fundamental shift in information technology. It's almost inconceivable, at least to me, an optimist in this field, with a grain of salt, to imagine that that's not going to have massive repercussions down the road. And as a lot of us in academia like to point out, if we can prove that it's impossible, that's just as interesting. But almost certainly it's going to change things. Putting yourself in a position to benefit from that change, and if you're a technical person, obviously, study your math, study your physical science, get in there and learn how things work, your engineering, ask questions, ask ask the questions that that I assume the quantum opticians in Australia were asking in the 1980s. What is it that's quantum? And be difficult, right? Like, challenge the quantum people. Do I need quantum mechanics, or do I need a quantum device to do this kind of thing? We're seeing amazing research outcomes, or indeed application outcomes. This recommendation algorithm thing from a few years ago, like, the classical applications are being improved by these quantum challengers, if you like. So it's becoming part of the whole story, and obviously, interact with organizations like the SQA. We're set up to do this engagement. You know, come and talk to us. Come to the events. We're running all of these events. We're doing these awareness building types of things. So if you're not going to be a student in a quantum technology field, which is hugely interdisciplinary, by the way, it's math, computer science, engineering, physics, more and more chemistry, more going in biology directions even. So it already covers a huge swath. But as I say, these startups need product designers, and they're going to need human resources people. They're going to need all of this cool stuff.
So it'll involve people that don't even get involved in the quantum side of things.
Yeah. Just know, you don't have to understand how the quantum tech works, but you need to be open to the ideas and willing to get involved. And there's all sorts of directions to be able to do that, like any new technology.
So I guess on the issue of academia versus the private sector, at the moment the whole thing is completely dominated by academia, really, and it has been since the start. But there's a bit of a pivot taking place, mm-hmm. as things shift to the private sector. How far do you see that pivoting? Do you think it's going to remain something that's really jointly academia and private sector, or do you think that eventually the private sector will completely take over this? Or
yeah, I mean, really good question. I don't think I've thought of it that way before. I mean, well, I guess I have. I mean, I assumed that it's before my time, but presumably classical information technology was an academic exercise 60, 70, 80 years ago, and now, well, it still is, but it's, you know, the massive amounts of the development and the value is in the private sector, right? It's conceivable that quantum tech would go that way, where it would just become another technology that would be used, and there would be a whole community that would grow up, you know, aware of it and comfortable with it, and would just move it forward, and then the academic questions would pivot somewhere else. Nuclear engineering is an example of that. Certainly nuclear physics 80 years ago was cutting edge and in the physics research sense. And now we have nuclear engineering programs that aren't run in physics departments, for example. So that's almost certainly something, some new normal is going to happen.
And a lot of jobs in the field that are for people that don't know anything about quantum physics at all.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of these people. I didn't study physics at university. I just studied engineering, and I started working for a quantum startup in Sydney, Dirac.
Yeah.
Just doing engineering work there. It's been great. Haven't had to do a PhD. It's nice.
But I think there'll be more of that, surely, as we continue on, in the same way that software engineers don't have PhDs these days, or at least very few of them do.
Yeah.
And in the same way that, you can do computer programming without knowing how the deep details of computer systems engineering works, because the languages are so abstract, mm-hmm. and high level. We'll probably see similar things happening in the quantum sector, where you can start utilizing all this quantum technology, but in a way that's so high level and well abstracted that you can actually be clueless about what's going on under the hood and still make full use of it.
Sure. Yeah. It's an interesting question. If quantum computing, for example, and quantum algorithms will ever get to the point where it can be simplified to the point where you just know that this routine, can do something that a regular computer can't, and you just call it.
Mm.
The conversation around careers and skills, I should mention, it's still early obviously early days as we're going in a lot of ways. I mean, a lot has happened certainly in the last few years in investment field, but there's, as we've been kind of talking about here, there's still a lot of big questions and a lot of big discoveries to be made. And getting industry involved is something that I think in Australia in particular, one of the things the SQA is doing is trying to learn more about the skills needs in Australia, Australian industry going forward, and learning a little bit about where industry is in their quantum journey or whatever you want to call it, which could be zero for a lot of industries, I think, and what their skills needs might be going forward. You know, so we've got a survey out. It's actually live now. You can go to our website and find it.
And I imagine this will provide a lot of guidance for both universities and potentially even schools, who want to start future-proofing themselves for this future economy.
Yeah,
to know what skills I need to impart upon students, whether it be part of a quantum degree or not.
Yeah.
How to position students to make use of this.
That's exactly right. So we partnered up to build this survey to hopefully be as simple as possible for a wide variety of sectors to complete. We'll be making results available where we've got ethics approval and all that kind of good stuff to make sure the data is being handled carefully, and we'll make it available in the appropriate ways so that, it'll inform not just our university partners, for example, as you say, on designing programs going forward, but also, you know, hopefully be able to share more widely, for example, these, you know, government decisions and things like that.
Do you see any major obstacles that needs to be overcome to see the quantum economy flourish in Sydney?
I mean, nothing. I mean, there's no one thing that I could put my finger on. I guess one issue that the SQA has identified in the 2 years of our existence here, like, we're very much set up running graduate level programs. We're seeing earlier a lot, or at least half of the work in quantum tech is kind of graduate level research. But the earlier career stage and skills is concerning, certainly domestically in Australia. And this is true, like,
you mean generic STEM type skills?
Yeah, STEM. The pipeline, if you like. Is a bit of a concern. And this is true. Certainly quantum skills is an issue all over the world.
Yeah.
Especially about Australia there. Certainly the chief scientist has raised a few facts in the recent past saying STEM numbers are, you know, they're not going up. And there's CSIRO has predictions for, you know, the need to train something like six times the number of PhDs in this field, if we're going to reach the projected, market size and whatnot, if we're going to realize this opportunity. Australia does an amazing job recruiting internationally for skills, but something that we'd really like to focus on is that domestic early pipeline. How do we make changes? And that's much bigger than the SQA or even the universities or, you know, that we're talking about getting into, even down into public schools and things like that.
Yeah.
And so it's part of the wider STEM conversation. But interestingly, and we looked at it that way, and certainly I looked at it that way as, okay, you know, we need to partner up with other organizations, obviously, and getting down into these levels and figuring out how can we kind of bolt on some sort of quantum module to the training or you know, a part of the STEM conversation. But it was pointed out to me by colleagues, I think this is in the US, we run a week-long online high school summer school in quantum with some an organization called Qubit by Qubit in the US. And they made the point that I guess, you know, quantum's become sexy enough recently, or it was in one of these Marvel movies or something like that, that you could actually use quantum to Trojan horse the whole STEM conversation in. So you could turn it around
right,
and say, like, we'll just start with quantum and we'll just, you know, hey, kids.
So instead of using STEM to create interest in quantum, use quantum to create an interest in STEM.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which hadn't occurred to me at all, but it's not impossible that we could take that approach. So
yeah, hey kids, want to be Ant-Man?
That's right. Yeah,
thanks, Tony Stark.
Or learn why that's not going to work.
Yeah, I think Tony Stark did a PhD in quantum physics.
So If I was to ask you, in 5 years' time, what's your vision for what Sydney might look like in this? Or did you have a particular grand plan here or a vision for what you'd like to see in 5 years' time?
Yeah, coming back around to that that entrepreneurship piece, I mean, so there's obviously the training and the amazing research, and I mean, it's obvious to us who are in the field that that needs to continue. I mean, that's the foundation where this position, this amazing position in quantum tech that Australia is in, is built on. But yeah, really around that entrepreneurship piece and a real thriving startup ecosystem where people are coming here and indeed training here, if we get this pipeline up and running, and starting up, and these organizations are popping in and out of existence, and people are moving around, that fluidity is happening happening here in Sydney and around the country, and just working together in the same way that at least the images in my mind about early Silicon Valley would work, right? Where people are really helping each other solve the problems they need to move businesses forward and make that difference, and then moving on to the next thing, you know, which might not be exactly the same, but obviously still in the tech field, and that self perpetuating kind of momentum.
Yeah,
I think 5 years is you know, a little early for that kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, the technology, you know, and a lot of predictions are 10 years at least. But going in that direction, setting up the mechanisms, some of the programs, like some of the SQA programs that we're trying to run, to lay the foundation for that would be really, really great. And just seeing people come here from all over to say, let's go to Sydney, because
Sydney's that's where to be.
There's talent there.
Yeah.
And there's know-how. If we get some of the policy,
and we can already make that claim.
Yeah. I mean, it's happening.
Yeah.
There's also nice beaches here.
I wouldn't know in the last year, the rain, but
yeah, it's good when it's good. So are there any big upcoming events for SQA in the pipeline?
Yeah. Funny you should ask. So, we had the inaugural Quantum Australia conference last year, or I guess earlier this year, and we will have the next one in February 2023. So it's coming up around the corner, February 21st to 23rd, I believe, are the dates. And yeah, you can go to the SQA website, sydneyquantum.org, to get the details there. But it's it's an outward facing, if you like, industry and community government facing event, not a traditional academic conference. So I think the save the date is on there, but it'll be launched very, very soon.
So this is the one that's good for attracting people.
Yeah. Getting out there and talking about quantum getting it out to a wider audience. So please have a look. It should be tickets and the launch should be very, very soon.
Great. So book your tickets to Quantum Australia.
Thank you very much for coming on our inaugural episode. It was a brilliant conversation.
Thanks, Peter.
You are a wealth of knowledge. I'll make a mention of our sponsor, the Quantum Terminal. You can discover more by visiting thequantumterminal.com or book a tour through the email address hello.tqt@thequantumterminal.com.
Thanks very much for joining us, and you can find us on social media as well. Thank you.
Cheers.